The following is a production of Art Trap Productions, brought to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy and has been made possible by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you. This episode brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/podshock. Over 85,000 titles to choose from for your iPod or MP3 player.
Live from inside the walls, it's Doctor Who Podshock.
The Gallifreyan Embassy presents Doctor Who Podshock, episode 342. This is Louis Trapani, and joining me on this fabulous, momentous, exhilarating episode is none other than the following. Starting off across the great pond that we call the Atlantic Ocean, Mr. Dave A. C. Cooper. Hello, Dave.
Well, I'm feeling rather trapped, but thanks for letting me out of the walls for just a moment to say, hi, Lewis. Hi, everyone.
It's good to have you back.
Wonderful.
Knock wood.
Knock on wood. All right. Also, joining us on this fabulous podcast is Mr. Kyle Jones in the U.S.
So let me say this. My days of Podshock have finally arrived. I got to, after all these years, do the live. So my life is complete. Yay.
He's alive.
It's alive.
Inside the walls, even.
And also on this episode, last but definitely not least, is Mr. Lee Shackelford. Hello, Lee.
Hi, guys. Thanks very much.
Great to have you back as well.
Thank you. And you are?
I am once again Louis Trapani. I said that at the at the top because if I don't...
You did say it. Okay.
Because if I don't, I forget at the end
and
then halfway through the recording. Oh, by the way... excuse me. I know we're halfway through the review right now, but this is Louis Trapani.
Yeah, I'd just like to mention.
In case you're wondering what this mysterious voice was. So I say it at the top only so I don't forget it later on, but it's always I always feel weird saying it because I would like to, you know, invite and welcome everyone else first and, you know,
that's right.
To be the host with the most. So we're this is episode 342. So 42 is the answer to life, the universe, and everything. Oh, yeah. And it's the three. Well, it's actually the four of us. No, three. Yeah. Well, if you don't count me, it's three.
You forgot to count yourself.
But he said his name. That's good.
Ian is not here. Mr. Ian Bissett is out on assignment. Actually, he's. He's doing. Is it rehearsal? No,
he's
auditioning. He's casting. And if you know the musical, he's holding auditions for Spamalot. And if you know that musical, that means that it is his sad task tonight to have to find a corey of beautiful chorus girls. So, you know,
He's really sweating that out.
Yeah, he's no doubt suffering tonight because he has to. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Poor fella.
That's part of the job.
So, since our last episode, not much has happened. And so we're going to skip the news now.
Yeah. No point.
Well, yeah, we had a little summer vacation, right? We are back to school. School has begun again. Mm. Oh, without
class.
I was just going to say, speaking of which, I finally got to see. I bought the season on iTunes of Class, okay. And I saw like the first three episodes, maybe two or three. I think it's three, and I still have to watch the others, but. I know, Lee, I think you were very much into it. I can't remember what Dave's and Kyle's take on it, but I was, as you can see, being that I'm only like three episodes in and I kind of dwindled with watching it, so I need to catch up on it again. But I was a little, I don't know, disappointed with it myself.
It takes off on episode four.
Oh, okay. See, that's it. See, I'm at the cusp of it taking off, and yeah. I should have just held on to the reins a little longer, and I would have been enjoying the ride better.
Yeah, Lee, I think we both liked it, didn't we?
Yeah, and we did an episode of Discussing Who that was just about Class, and yeah, I think the three of us were all pretty positive about it.
Yeah, I think so too. We were hoping that there would be series two.
Yeah, looking forward to series two. Yeah. So.
All right. Well, now
I'm weeping about that one.
You've inspired me to, pick up where I left off and get some more Class in my life.
There you go.
So, notwithstanding news of Class, is, for those that may be wondering, what the heck are they talking about? Class is the spinoff series that wasn't it last year in the UK, but it came to the US earlier this year in the spring. So, wasn't it technically last fall?
What is it? September.
September, yes, something like that.
Okay, yeah, so it's been a year, yeah.
And it had how many episodes? 8 or 12?
8.
Okay. So US, it was on, I think, BBC America in the spring, and then and usually once it gets to BBC America, it's on iTunes as well.
Yeah, I remember, Lee, when we recorded our review, we recorded it. Excuse me, the end of December, and we held it to the finale in the States. So we held it like three or four months because we knew nobody was, either going to know about it or wouldn't either want to be spoiled. So we held it for about 5 months.
It was October, you're right. 22nd of October. My apologies. Yeah. Set in Coal Hill School, of course, which our Coal Hill Academy, which was the connection, of course, and the Doctor made an appearance in the first episode.
Yes. So definitely Doctor Who related, definitely a spinoff, and Coal Hill School is where it all began with Doctor Who.
And I think Russell T. Davies went on record as saying if they'd made Buffy in the UK, this is what it would look like.
That's right. Yeah, he was describing it as being Buffy.
It was much darker to me than what I expected.
Hmm.
Yeah, it wasn't a Sarah Jane Adventures type of series.
No, absolutely not.
I thought of it as being sort of a midpoint between Sarah Jane and Torchwood, but it was a lot more towards Torchwood.
Yes, agreed.
Yeah. And it had a lot carrying on its shoulders because it... This was the time when the BBC, to save £30 million, had moved the BBC Three channel off the main transponders, and it was becoming an internet-only channel, and it was aimed at the sort of 18 to 34 age demographic. And so basically, Class was the flagship program. I mean, so it had a lot of responsibility. And I think it was a bit of a slow burner, but I think it was fairly successful. But as we are probably going to mention, it was finally I think the actual final cancelling was very recent indeed, wasn't it? In September of this year, when it was finally cancelled. Although they talked about it well before then as being sort of fairly dead in the water. But there were some standout performances on it.
And there were some characters on there that I really liked. I mean, that really are that, and I think Lee, maybe you or Clarence once said this, that I would like to see live on in some form in Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm. There's people that we got to know. I really want to know what happened to them.
the Miss Quill characters, you mean? By Catherine Kelly. Yes, I thought she was standout.
I liked her a lot. Yeah,
me too.
But there you go.
Class dismissed.
Because I was holding out for her to actually be cast as the 13th Doctor, but I gave up on that because there's no way the 13th Doctor is going to be a woman anyway. So
absolutely not. Yeah. I mean, seriously.
Fancy that.
But I just had this mad idea. So.
Flights of fancy, I don't know.
Yeah. I say that as a way of transitioning to more news.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean the doctor's a woman? I didn't know that.
Yes. Surprise. I think we've lost Lewis now.
Yeah. No, I'm
Oh, there you are. Okay.
I'm here, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so we had a bit of announcement since our last show. BBC announced that that we have a new actor playing the Doctor. We were all expecting, you know, we knew that Peter Capaldi was leaving, and it was confirmed that he was. And so this was, you know, it was speculation on who would be the new Doctor, as there is, which I dread every time there is this time, you know, whenever this cycle comes up and everyone starts speculating on who's who and who's going to be this, who's going to be announced, and you get some news papers or whatever saying, oh yes, we've determined it's so and so, and of course it's not. And but anyway, so the BBC has announced that Jodie Whittaker is the new Doctor, and that really went across without any fanfare whatsoever, and we moved over to so too much to everyone's chagrin, everyone was outraged because the new Doctor is not Ginger once again.
Right. Well,
when
that
will we get a Ginger
know.
Doctor?
Well, we've actually seen Jodie Whittaker in several other things, and her hair color is different every time. So
yes, she may be Ginger.
Yeah, I think we may get it all here. So.
Well, they did introduce it with a video of which is probably not, we're going to assume is not going to be in the actual next series, but it was sort of a video of the Doctor walking up to the TARDIS, and before they, you know, you just see the silhouette or the back figure of the Doctor before it's revealed who the new Doctor is. So I think it's been a while since I saw it, but I think she has the hood up initially, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
Then she lowers the hood, and we realize that he is a she.
Yeah. We first get a close up of her eye, so yeah, maybe for a lot of people they were going, "Wow, this guy's got really lovely eyelashes."
or he's really skinny. I mean, but David Tennant also was skinny too,
right?
But that was a close up of her hand, right? Didn't she have a TARDIS key? If I remember correctly,
yeah.
No, it materialized on her hand. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, it fades in on her hand, and then the eye, and then her face. Yeah. That was the other little story I wanted to tell, because I just thought this was just adorable. About 2 weeks ago, Peter Capaldi did an interview and was telling that he has been sitting on the secret for a while, because he found out by accident that when they were doing one of his fittings, that one of the tailors at Doctor Who said, we're going to need a pair of your Paul Smith trousers, but with a 30 waist. And he said that he thought, oh, wow, that's a... whoever my successor is going to be, it's a tiny guy. Oh, you know. So he at least knew that it was going to be a woman.
Oh, wow.
It's been confirmed that what she was wearing will not be the outfit that she will appear in. It was sort of a generic outfit that she was wearing, mainly for the reveal, the hood, I suppose.
It could have been something that Peter, that the 12th Doctor could have worn, because he wore some hoodies as well, right? At some point.
Right.
That's right.
Well, the Master certainly did.
Yeah, I mean, that was actually, to me, more combination of the 12th Doctor and the 9th Doctor, because it was, you know, with the all black, reminded me of a little bit of Eccleston.
Yeah. But I have to assume that what's going to happen in the Christmas episode is that we're going to see her in Peter Capaldi's, you know, trademark outfit, and that's why they need it sized for her. And then that's going to be the end of the episode. So it's not going to be until we begin her run on the show proper before we even get whatever her look is going to be. So that's my guess.
Which is the same thing that happened, you know, with all of them.
Exactly.
Pretty much so, yeah.
So I don't think, but Christmas, we're going to find out what the 13th Doctor looks like, really.
I mean, even going back to the 50th anniversary, when we first get to see Peter Capaldi as the Doctor, we just see his brows, you know, just see his eyes.
Right, yeah, exactly,
you know,
yeah.
Because that's... you know,
angry eyebrows.
That wasn't negotiable, yeah. Eyebrows you can open a bottle with.
But the actual way she was introduced, I mean, there was quite a big build-up, and they chose Wimbledon that was on at the time, and it came right after the Wimbledon's final, too, because that gets to sort of 8-10 million audience here in the UK. So there was that. But in actual fact, they built it up, but it was a 20-second clip at most. On the other hand, it didn't have any of the embarrassment that I felt that we had with the Peter Capaldi, you know, being wheeled on in the sort of hurriedly put together sort of meet the doctor affair. So to my way, even though it was very brief and perhaps could have been slightly extended, it was certainly less cringeworthy than I think they did with that.
Yeah, it was stylish and obviously very carefully planned and thought out instead of, yeah.
So kind of piggybacking off of what Lee just said, does anyone think that maybe they did the pre-recorded message so that she doesn't have any potential, as an actress, negative feedback from... Because, I mean, unfortunately, there was some people in the fandom of Who that... were very vocal that they didn't like that. But then again, you know, every time you get a new doctor, there's somebody that's going to say, we don't like that. So do we wonder if like that might have... Right. So do we wonder if maybe that's another reason to not do the live?
I certainly think they wouldn't have done a question and answer session if that's what you mean by doing it live. Because that could have. What do lawyers say? You don't ask a question unless you know what the answer is.
Yeah. Exactly. Good point.
Yeah. Yeah. That could have been a very cruel thing to do to Jodie Whittaker.
Absolutely.
So. Yeah.
Well, I know shortly after the announcement, I just got so tired of the social media going back and forth of those that were pro and those that are con and going, you know, and, you know, it was just a little bit too much. I felt like just like fast forwarding to where we are now, you know, where it's just sort of accepted and that's that. And you know, I have to say, though, because there were a lot of assumptions with that within fandom, and people just, I mean, I think a segment of them probably might be prejudiced or whatever, but I don't think, I don't think everyone that has voice concerns were they should be immediately classified as sexist or whatever. It's just people are hesitant with change, you know. I think a lot of I remember going back. I remember with Peter Davison's doctor. I mean, after 7 years of Tom Baker became iconic as the doctor, and no one could imagine anyone else playing it. And I think a lot of people were fearful of, you know, who's this blonde? And also, he was the youngest actor at that point. And everyone was criticizing him for that, and not criticizing him himself, the decision of casting someone so young. And so I think a lot of people were fearful and hesitant of that change as well. But, you know, not that they were against blonde young people, you know, but I think, so.
Yeah, but his name might as well have been not Tom Baker.
Yes. You know? Correct. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, let me speak up here, because, I mean, I've not been vocal in any sense about the fact that it's a woman, but, I mean, I still put myself in the traditionalist viewpoint that, you know, I would have preferred the doctor to stay as a man, but simply because, I mean, I know we've been spoon-fed this, you know, about different Time Lords. Thank goodness I've regenerated back as a woman and things like that that happened along the line. And, of course, the Master changing into Missy. So this sort of drip feed would actually got to a point where if it hadn't have been a woman, there would actually have probably more protests in the reverse of it. But I must admit, because... as far as I understand it, the William Hartnell, we call the first Doctor, is in actual fact the first life of this particular this Gallifreyan. So as far as I know, we know of all these regenerations, even though, you know, we've only suddenly found out about the, you know, the War Doctor. But in every case, he has been a male. So I'm thinking it like this. In human beings, there are people that, that I can't think of an analogy that won't get people upset with me. But I mean, there's some people that are always straight. There's some people that are always gay, and there may be some people that are not. So, but to me, as a Gallifreyan, he has always been a Gallifreyan who has resolutely maintained that male status. Now, that's only how I came to it. The actual actress, when it was fairly obvious to me that it was going to be a woman, I was fairly eased by the thing because I'd seen this woman act in Marchlands, and she did a terrific job in that. And of course, she'd been in Broadchurch.
Broadchurch, yeah.
And they'd already, I think, trailed the Trust Me series. So as an actress and her ability to actually carry off the part, I've not had any issue. But I don't want people saying, hey, Dave's changed his tune. I didn't think he... I would still prefer the Doctor to be male. But I don't go forward saying I'm not going to watch it because she's a woman or, you know, what have they done to my programme or anything like that. But I must admit that my... what's that? My momentum was always be that this particular Gallifreyan has always chosen to be male, if indeed, you know, the sex orientation is... not orientation, that's the wrong word. If your
Identity.
Yeah. So I'm not... I would have preferred the Doctor to say male, but in terms of the person they've chosen, I'm absolutely open to that interpretation. And, you know...
Well, no, I can appreciate that, and I think she's a clean slate for me. I don't, because I've never seen Broadchurch, so my only experience with her is that short video that they did of her intro. For me, I voiced this years ago, and I know that since, you know, with the 50th anniversary special, they planted seeds that, you know, this was coming. And my problem is not so much that he is a she, it's just how he becomes a she. It's the sonic screwdriver effect where, you know, they're just, I mean, the show is so magical as it is, and you can go anywhere, anytime, any place. And I've said this before, was that you just have to have some structure. You know, the TARDIS should remain a police box. You know, there should be something, some unifying thing going across many, many years. And you know, of course, 12 regenerations, and after that, that's it. And then we knew somehow they're going to get past that because then we're going to end the show just because we used up 12 regenerations. So, but because, I mean, it just, there just needs to be some balance because it's so fanciful, the show, that there needs to be some regiment that it needs, some structure that it needs to fall in just to off balance everything that it can go off crazy with. And that's why I always hated having that sonic screwdriver become a magic wand where it could just do anything. And as long as it's not wood, it could just, the Doctor can just make it do anything. And that really wasn't the case originally. It was just used as a certain tool at certain times. It wasn't, you know, he couldn't get life support readings by waving, you know, it was just a sonic screwdriver, you know. Right. Now it's a magic wand and it does everything. Yeah. And that's my resistance there. So my resistance isn't that the Doctor's a woman. It's just that the regeneration, I felt like, and this even goes back to and I'm sure he was jokingly when the Ninth Doctor was telling Rose about regenerating, that he could regenerate and have two heads and whatever and all that. And I'm like, no, you can't. It has to be, you know, you can't just like regenerate into a dog, you know. there must be something that, you know, some consistency through the regeneration process. So, but we've seen the master. He can he ran out of regeneration, so he's overtaking other people's bodies and whatever. And I just felt that if it was somehow, you know, that the doctor did something in this regeneration that altered the regeneration that created the you know. But that, it's, like I said, this is all mute because we've already established now, you know, with the 50th anniversary, that you know, you can regenerate from male to female. And but that was my initial resistance, was not the fact of being he or she, just how he becomes she or she becomes he.
So I have a theory, and I'm going to try to say it without saying too much. So here's my not saying much about my theory, which is, there is something that happens in the finale that the doctor doesn't know about. And I think if the doctor were to find out about that something at Christmas, that could potentially have something to do with what, if there is any subconscious something that goes into regeneration, like, for instance, why did I choose this face, etc., that makes him become the 13th Doctor. So that's, without giving anything else away, that's for anybody that, and I know we've not gotten to those episodes yet, but that's my semi theory within a theory.
So without getting you to elaborate, you mean in that his state of mind at the point of regeneration?
Because there's something that he does not know that happens, that even at the end of that he does not know that happened. If he finds out what that event was, that might spur him to becoming the 13th Doctor, perhaps.
Totally clear.
Well, I'll tell you my sort of ancillary theory to that, if you like, that I think that one of the things that we learned from Romana and that was reinforced by River Song is that male Time Lords, or at least the Doctor, can't choose their next body, at least not consciously, but females can. So maybe the Doctor has spent all of these years trying to get it right. And so this is what's going to happen. He finally got it right.
But not Ginger.
But not Ginger. As long as Jodie Whittaker is going to be Ginger, then this will be the triumph. After all these regenerations, he's finally got it right. But we remember Romana trying on different bodies very casually, you know. And so.
Yeah, that's right.
And then River Song said she was going to go for a specific dress size.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. All right, Dad, can you hush? I'm thinking of a dress size.
Exactly. Right.
But obviously, the last episode of Podshot, we talked about thin ice. I'm sure the Doctor made a reference of once he was a handmaiden or something, wasn't it? Didn't he?
The Vestal Virgin joke is much later.
Yeah. Although it says in thin ice, okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, actually, Lee, I think it was your wife, Karen, that said something about, I'm thinking she's the one who brought up the possibilities of the different stories that they can go through, especially if they go back into the past, that you've always seen him with the companions dealing with the sexism of the past, but we've never seen the Doctor dealing with the sexism.
Yeah, she did say that, but actually the first person I know who brought that up was Clarence.
Ah, yeah.
Discussing who. So, yeah, shout out to Clarence there. But yeah, it's a great point. You know, we've had Bill and Martha both kind of point at their face and say, I can't go out there like this, you know. slavery is still totally a thing, Bill says. Yeah, there's going to be environments where a female doctor in Earth's past, she's going to have trouble that the male doctor did not have. And I hope that's something they're going to take seriously and really explore. It's going to be, could be very interesting. So
yeah.
Anyway, in the 10 hour long episodes of the 13th Doctor's first
interesting
season,
he's moving us on nicely,
you know, trying to keep it.
He's the director.
But I thought that was interesting that we're going to have 10 episodes. And does that include the next Christmas special? Do we know?
I hope not. I hope that is still, you know, Christmas. I mean, you know, it wouldn't be Christmas without Doctor Who.
Not anymore.
Now, are the episode lengths? Oh, so the episodes, they're going to be hour long? Because sometimes they're less than an hour. Sometimes they're 45 minutes. So are they saying hour, meaning the full hour that we're
going to do? A full hour, right. But that was in the Mirror.
Yeah, so that could be subject to...
I think it's right, because some of the reaction was, oh, well, it's obviously a cost-saving exercise. But in actual fact, if it is... not 12 45-minute episodes, but 10 one-hour episodes, both add up to exactly to 600 minutes.
Right.
So, in actual fact, you would get more content, because if you have 12 episodes, you've got 12 openings and 12 closings, and you've got 11 next times, where if you've got 10, you've only got 9 next times, you've only got 10 openings, so you probably gain another 10, 15 minutes there. So in terms of actual content, I mean, because it always amazes me with if you watch some early British TV programmes, the opening credits last about 15, 20 seconds, where in a lot of programmes now, they make the credits last, you know, 45 to 55 seconds, because they know they've got a minute at the beginning, a recap at the end, closing. So they've got 3 minutes in the bag before they even start the episode.
Good point.
Yeah.
It's interesting that I've also read that there could be more historical episodes next season, which ties into what we were just talking about.
Yeah. I always read that to mean Earthbound, as in the Third Doctor, but I don't know, which may be code for cheap, but... But, you know, making something like Thin Ice, that wasn't cheap.
No.
They might as well have been on a different planet. So, yeah, I don't know.
But I'm kind of going with what you said, Dave. You know, I would much rather have a 60-minute episode that is the three-parter that we will discuss eventually than have a three-parter that is something that we could, you know, say, oh, well, we could have condensed this down.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a quarter of the series, wasn't it, on one story?
Right, exactly.
So I'm wondering if the... I just get them through iTunes, but I'm just wondering if on BBC America, if they are hour-long, if they're going to extend them or cut them to fit an hour's time slot.
Yeah, I'll be afraid that they're just going to cut it down so that they can get their...
Well, I was on a site called Digital Spy here in the UK, which does all sorts of TV ones. And people were saying, well, you know, how are they going to do? They're going to cut them to mad in the States. But my point was that even with the 45-minute ones, I've been assured by a few people that watch the BBC America that on the first viewing of it, they show it uncut, maybe not the next time. And then on subsequent playbacks are on other alternate services in the States. They cut their own for local adverts and so on. So that's why some of them almost have to be down to 42 minutes. But I'm assuming that if it's a 60-minute episode, they're going to go in basically a TV movie of the week slot in America, which is, what, 90 minutes?
Something like that. Yeah, see, that's what I'm thinking. It's going to air from 8 or 9, depending on, you know, or 7 or whatever, depending on your time zone. But for me, it would come on at 8 p.m., go off at 9:30, and then insert the other 15 or 30 or however many minutes of, you know, commercials.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we'll wait and see what happens, yeah. Well, speaking of, we don't have to wait too much longer. We were talking about this before we started recording today, that Dave had mentioned that we're just 9 weeks away from Christmas already, and that's hard to believe. especially with the weather today was a little chilly, but yesterday it was here it was close to 80. Today was like down to the high was maybe 60, but you guys aren't tuning in for the weather. So, we're about 9 weeks away from Christmas, which means the Christmas special, which since our last show, we got to learn more about. I'm guessing it will be on Christmas Day again.
I think so.
And we're assuming that you're all in sync with us now. So I don't know if I should sound a spoiler alert, but you know, if you've seen the trailer, if you've seen the end of the series, you know who's going to be in that episode. At least it's going to be a multi-doctor story.
Do you have the spoiler alert primed?
Oh, this is your favorite part.
Yes, please.
All right. Here it goes.
Spoilers. Spoilers. Again. Spoilers. Spoilers.
Spoilers.
Spoilers.
Spoiler.
Spoilers.
Spoilers.
Okay, you spoil me. Thank you.
All right. So, all right. So we're not going to give anything away as far as the story goes, but as far as who's going to be in it, well, we have a returning character being the First Doctor. Once again, I say once again because actually, well, yeah, I guess he did play, in a sense, he did play him before, but actually he played William Hartnell, but... Mm-hmm. As William Hartnell played the First Doctor, and that is
David Bradley.
Bradley, thank you.
Yeah, but in canon, we know him as the guy from Dinosaurs in a Spaceship.
Well, that's yes, he was in that.
And Game of Thrones.
Just to make things even more confusing.
And another person who's played the Doctor who has played another character.
That's right.
Yeah, it's played William Hartnell.
Yeah.
Well, we have Mark Gatiss, who had played the Doctor in this 1999. I want to say, was it 1998? I think it was 1999. Red Nose special, I think it was, where they had the three Doctor Who stories, and one of them was Mark Gatiss playing the Doctor. The Doctor, I should say.
Doctor.
Well, but most people probably would know him more as he was actually a guest in Doctor Who, not playing the Doctor, but playing, he was in...
Lazarus.
Yes, and I was going to say Dave's favorite episode. I say that jokingly.
But with Lee in the room, we have to say they play Sherlock Holmes's smarter brother.
Most people I would know him more for his role in Sherlock.
Yeah. His dear Mycroft.
Yes.
Yeah. And of course, he's also, you know, the showrunner for that show. I mean, he and Stephen Moffat are writing that I think he's marvelous in Sherlock. But yeah, he's going to be in the Christmas special again, and yeah, I think a number of us probably just saw his uniform and said, "Is he supposed to be Brigadier Lethbridge Stewart?" But you know, so we're trying to fit
that
together.
So has anyone read the speculation? And if this is true, this would actually kind of be cool and would kind of make sense. But has anyone read the speculation? Not that who he might be from Doctor Who canon, but who he might be playing as a historical figure.
Well, that would be more interesting.
He does have this little mustache.
Yes, but not in Doctor... Well, and not that... Not Hitler, if that's where you're going.
Well, I know that's what some people are speculating, but
kind of mustache.
He's wearing...
Okay, so...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead, go ahead.
But I was saying that's a... A British uniform, right?
Captain's uniform.
Right. Yeah. The Brigadier had that mustache, so yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there is a gentleman who was a captain I'm assuming they're in World War I, right? From the looks of it, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay. So there was a gentleman who was in the British Army around that time, and they showed the way Gatiss is made up or dressed up, and whatever this article was, and I wish I could find it right now, but put the two of them side by side, and it was like, okay, they really do look alike, and this is the gentleman who designed the police box.
Oh.
And then that makes that comment that he makes in the trailer make a lot more sense. If that is true, these police boxes do come in handy, don't they? So.
Hmm. So you're saying we're going to learn, is it the derivation or what the word is, of why the Doctor first had to make the TARDIS look like a police box?
Or maybe the guy that created the police box got the idea from seeing the TARDIS.
Oh. Yes.
He's quite bright, this Kyle guy, isn't he?
Yeah.
That's why we pay him the big bucks.
Exactly. Let's keep him around.
I like that. Yeah.
So, and then I guess what's being reported is that this is going to be a much darker toned Christmas episode. So I guess it's not going to be that holly and jolly, but, you know, I guess they always tend to make it a little Christmassy, you know.
Yeah, but some of them have been pretty, pretty grim, actually. So the Christmas specials, I don't know.
Well, anytime you're having the Doctor regenerate, I mean, there's a sense of sad. I mean, you know, it's the sense of, oh, excitement, new sure. Doctor, sadness, you know, going away, Doctor.
Yeah.
So we can assume there's at least three Doctors in this, the first, the 12th, and the 13th.
The 13th.
Yep. 1 plus 12 equals 13. Mm. There you go.
Oh, well, that's true. That's true.
This is not a spoiler, but just reading about police boxes. The first public telephones, police boxes, were introduced in Glasgow in 1891. But they were a completely different design. So they've got any bit of history to go through.
Ooh. And seeing these photos of Peter Capaldi in the Christmas special, his hair is really bouffanty, he's really puffed out and all that. Just reminds me of John Pertwee started off with very short hair, and then by the end, he had a flock of hair and
fleece. That's true.
And he's followed in his footsteps there.
You know, I'd never noticed that, but you're right.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's deliberate, too, because he... Yeah.
Yeah, I am really looking forward to it. Do we know how long it's going to be? Is it going to be 60, 65 minutes?
I don't know.
Yeah, I haven't read it. Yeah.
It usually has been an extended episode. Mm-hmm. But
we could ask William Shatner, because he does have the script.
That's true.
Ah!
If your pockets are deep enough, you can have that script.
So he's auctioning the script, the last episode starring Peter Capaldi, the Christmas special, Christmas 2017. I don't think it has a name, and according to the script, it's just labeled Series 10 Christmas 2017. So I'm sure probably by the time it comes out, it will have a name.
Like Twice Upon a Time.
Ah. That might work.
Yeah. Yep.
No, that's it.
That's it.
Tell you it's clever.
See, I'm telling you, I'm very, very clever. I promise you.
Well, may you live long and prosper enough to afford to purchase this script that he's auctioning off.
See, hanging around with Lee and Clarence, I've just, you know, absorbed all this cleverness.
That'll do it, yeah.
It's because you ask a lot of questions.
So,
well, that's true, too.
Well, that's, yeah.
It's benefiting different charities, including Children's Hospital of Los Angeles, Pets for Vets, and the Blind Children's Center. So it all goes to a good cause.
That's great, yeah. On Radio Times here, there's a photograph of the front page of the shooting script, and they're not mentioning that it's autographed by the principal cast, and that's pretty nice. David Bradley has autographed it and written underneath it, in parenthesis, the first Doctor. There you go.
The original, you might say.
Yeah, it's the definitive article. So...
And Peter puts, after his name, puts Doctor, ?
Yeah. So.
Well, at least he didn't put Peter, a milady.
No.
Well, those in the U.S. can, if you're worried about being able to watch this on Christmas Day or not, you might be able to see it before Christmas Day because it's going to be shown once again in the theaters. So I don't know exactly the date, but usually it's usually like a few days or maybe a week before it's televised.
I thought it was like the week after.
Well, I don't know. I mean,
I may be wrong, but
I thought it's usually like a couple of days before it's actually televised, because usually they give out they have to
sign a non-disclosure.
Not to tell it.
Okay.
And it's usually for 1 or 2 days, and that's maybe one day only. But you'll have a chance to see it in the theater.
Ah, cool.
Well, it's awkward as well because the Christmas Day, I think, falls on a Monday this year as well. So it may well be that they would show it at the weekend before.
It could be, yeah. All right. Well, any other news about the Christmas special?
We know nothing.
We know nothing. We're not saying anything.
Only to say that the last year's one was 60 minutes. The Mysterio one was 6 years
long. So is this going to be Peter Capaldi's last episode, it's also Stephen Moffat's last episode as producer.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah, and because of that, I think it's we may be looking at probably a 70. I'm going to say it's going to be a 70 to 75 minute. That's my guess.
Oh. Well, there's precedent for it being certainly 65 minutes. Not too sure of the longest Christmas one we've had. I'm sure we could find it by a wiki, but that I would imagine that's certainly 65.
Well, we'll find out.
Yes, we will.
As long as there's no widows and wardrobes in it, I don't mind.
Yeah, there you are.
Well, it will be it's 2017, so we'll have to go 54 minutes for one minute for each year of Doctor Who.
Yeah, at the very least. So.
So what else is going on?
Barreling along, we always have to go into into our regrets and stand with me here on the terrace. We say in Sherlockian circles. So.
Very unfortunate. Yes, since last show, there's been several passings, but two to mention is unfortunately we lost Deborah Watling, who's been a guest on our show. We've interviewed her, and it's a great loss there. Those that don't remember, Deborah Watling was a companion. She played
Victoria Waterfield.
Victoria, yes.
Yes, I loved Victoria.
Yeah. Her father was in Doctor Who as well.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Jack Watling, that's right. Yeah, and she's one of those people who I remember seeing when she was a Gallifrey one year, and just so much time had passed since I had seen her on TV that I just found myself kind of looking at her in the corner of my eye thinking, I feel like I know her. Yeah. And then somebody later told me, oh, that's Deborah Watling. So, yeah.
Yeah,
Dave, I guess we're counting on you to tell us about Trevor Martin, because none of us would have had the chance to see the Daleks play, which, that was... I've always been envious of that there was a long-running... a Doctor Who stage play in the 70s. And,
Trevor Martin's one of those names that back in the day, like back when there were only six Doctors, you could always trip someone up in trivia saying, well, how many actors have played the Doctor?
Oh, yeah.
And, they would always, do the ones that have been televised and like, oh, you missed Trevor Martin.
There you go, yeah.
So he was always that that actor in your pocket that you save for those to catch people in trivia. Like, yeah, you're not as smart as you think you are. So yeah, he was he played the Doctor in a stage role, but that wasn't his first appearance in Doctor Who. He was actually in the War Games. He was a Time Lord in Patrick Troughton's final story, the War Games, where we finally get to meet the Time Lords. That we get to meet. We finally get to see the Doctor's home planet, Gallifrey. So, and then in, was it 1974, he was became the first actor to portray the Doctor on stage in a, as Lee had mentioned, he was, it was a production of Doctor Who and the Daleks in The Seven Keys to Doomsday.
Yeah. So, yeah, well, and he was 87, right?
Yes, at the time of his passing, not while he was on the stage play.
Although that would have been awesome. But yeah.
So, Lewis, I think you were telling us, speaking of, I know that's always not fun to talk about when we, have people, unfortunately, who pass away. But as I think you said, Dave, one time, when the show has been around as long as Doctor Who has, unfortunately, that's just a part of life when the show has been around that long.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're sort of dancing around this a little bit because I'd made a sort of a list before we started of the people who have passed away since our last episode. And it was just a litany that makes you sad. And it seems almost not fair to these people to just give their names and their dates, because it seems to, bring it down to such a small amount, but not in particular order. I mean, in August, Victor Pendleton died, born in 1931, and he's known, I think, for the let me read a little bit from the page about it. He's the inventor of the sonic screwdriver. He was aged 85. He was working in the second Doctor story, the Moon Base. He was also brought in as an assistant. He script edited The Tomb of the Cybermen. He was returned to freelance writing to pen Fury of the Deep. I mean, these are people that have had a long association. They're not just one-off actors that appeared in there. And there's Jeffrey Balon that has passed away. Brian Cant has passed away. We mentioned Deborah Watling. Hugh Bennett died. He was only born in 1944. So let me try and offset that somewhat by, Hugh Bennett, I'm wondering, let me just mention him because he was one of the people in The Death of Time, a second episode with the William Hart story, The Chase. So it goes back a long way, all these people of sad deaths. But we also have success stories in the life stakes. Only in August, Earl Cameron celebrated his 100th birthday, the oldest surviving Doctor Who actor. He was in the 1966 story, The Tenth Planet, playing Glenn Williams, one of the two astronauts. So, unfortunately, you can't condense this into such a short thing without it being a sad occasion. And it's not really. It's a case to mention that it's a rich heritage that Doctor Who has, both in real life and in the world of entertainment. And those two get intermingled between, and you'll often hear myself and Lewis, even the esteemed Lewis will sometimes mention the actor's name when they mean the character's name, or they mention the character's name meaning the actor's. And that doesn't mean that they were one-dimensional actors.
It just means that my brain's gone to mush and I can't remember.
I was going to say it was just the fondness that you hold them in and the character you hold them in. I mean, I've talked about this before, Elizabeth Sladen and Sarah Jane Smith. I always thought that Elizabeth Sladen wasn't married and lived alone, because I saw her character in Doctor Who being, ever going forward. And it was only when I saw one of the Sarah Jane Adventures when her husband acted in that series. Oh, she's married. Oh, she has a daughter.
Lee's wife, Karen, had written something about this where an actor takes our personification of an actor and their roles become one and the same. And I know she was on Facebook, she was requesting those, those that follow her. What actors do you think you know from their work? And there were so many actors that you just kind of really get the feel of who they... like I made a mention of David Banner, Bruce Bixby, who played him, Hulk.
That's it, Bill Bixby. Yeah,
he was
Dr. Banner, yeah.
And I always think of him as one and the same, you know, even though obviously he was playing a character, but he seemed to personify him so well that that's how I think of Bill Bixby as David Banner, you know, as he was, you know. I don't see that separation of actor and character there, you know, not that Bill Bixby would get upset and turn green and become the Hulk, but you know what I mean.
As far as we know.
As far as we know, yeah.
In the UK, and I think it may have been a spin-off for an American series, This Is Your Life, that started in America, didn't it? A TV series called This Is Your Life. And the number of times I've watched that, and there are a lot of soaps here in the UK, and they'd have these actresses that come on the soaps, and you thought they were real, what we would call in the UK, working class, you know, call a spade, this, that, and the other. And then they come in, and Eamon Andrews was the host. Well, Eamon, I used to enjoy doing that, and I always liked to have a gin and tonic at the end of filming, at the end of the day. And you're thinking, well, they were drinking brown ale in The Rover's Return. And you thought after they'd finished doing Coronation Street and The Rover's Return, they'd actually decamp and go for the pub and have a pint. But no, she would have a gin and tonic and relax by the pool. And it is amazing. But, as I was saying, it's almost a crime to just throw out these names. And it's a little bit doing them a disservice because most of them, when you actually research, I mean, Jodie Whittaker, the amount of stuff that she's been in within a very short term. I mean, Sheridan Smith, people like Sheridan Smith from The Big Finish in audio, but she's a fantastic actress. She did a fantastic drama documentary about Cilla Black, singer. Unbelievable singing voice. But people may have only heard her on Audio Adventures of Doctor Who, you know, lots of people like that. But I think we ought to move on because somebody keeps talking.
You know, speaking of deaths, Doctor Who's had a long history, and you know, obviously when a British actor or actress dies, you start saying, oh, well, you know, if they were a British actor or actress, they had, you know, in the 54 years of Doctor Who, they had to have been on Doctor Who at some point. But today we had the sad news of Roy Dotrice, passing, and to my knowledge, I don't think he was in. He was in the pilot episode, Space 1909, but I don't think, to my knowledge, he was in Doctor Who.
Daltress. Oh, well, yeah, and he's got a daughter who acts now. Didn't she? She played with Spencer. His daughter became an actress. The one where he talks about Betty.
Betty.
We're way off topic.
way off topic. I'll have to look it up while somebody talks cleverly. Right. Go on, Kyle. Not you, Kyle. Want somebody clever?
Go ahead, Kyle.
Well, you know what was really clever? No. But what was really clever and what is really good, because this happens like once in a person's lifetime, is getting an award, like a Lifetime Achievement Award, which Russell T. Davies has.
Well done.
Ah, you see? Clever.
So anyone want to talk about that? I'm not that clever.
No, I was giving you more credit. Than
right. Well, yeah. Yeah. Right.
I was saying you're full on clever.
Well, since you said it that way, I will say that according to Doctor Who News, Russell T. Davies has been given a Lifetime Achievement Award. Of course, we know that he was the former showrunner of Doctor Who, brought it back in 2005. But he is has just received that at the TV festival. The BBC One was named Channel of the Year as well. So looks like kudos to RTD.
Cheers, yeah.
Yeah, no kidding. And still, I think, kind of young to be getting a Lifetime Achievement Award. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Hey, he brought back Doctor Who. That's a achievement in itself.
Well, so. That's it. We figure there's no way he's going to top that.
Exactly. So,
yeah.
Yeah, because he's probably just in his mid-50s, right? He's not.
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. In fact, am I mistaken to think that wasn't he born the same year as Doctor Who? Isn't he like the same age as Doctor Who?
You're right. April 27th, 1963.
See, it was just meant to be.
Swansea. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, you know, considering the fact that, why don't I just keep being clever? Considering the fact that when we started our recording, Dave just kind of gotten animated and kind of like jumped out of his seat.
Oh, yeah.
It just seems proper to say that we're getting an animated version of Shada.
Oh, so what a segue.
Finally, we'll have a complete version of Shada. No, not finally. We had one before. Oh, we had another one before that. Oh, we had another one before that one.
That's true.
Shades of Shada.
Yeah. So this is the third Shada, really, but this will be the whole shooting script for Shada.
Was anybody shot when it was in color? I can't remember whether they'd filmed the Shada sequences in color. Was Doctor Who in color at the time?
Yes. I mean, this is Tom Baker. We've already had John Pertwee's in color. This wasn't, Patrick Troughton. Yeah.
Well, of course, I mean, quite often I get mixed up. But I mean, I must admit, like with some of the third Doctor stories, because the way the BBC did it, they would use the system, I think you know it, where they would film it in colour for the BBC, but then they would do a and then for countries in Africa and India and so on, the black and white film version.
They didn't have colour TV there, so they just gave them the black and white.
Well, often that was the only copy that survived. So the Damians, for a while, we only had the black and white version. Mm-hmm. Then they found a way of integrating the American Never the Same Color Twice.
And TCS, yeah.
Yeah, and they used the thing from that and put that in. But very quick jump back segue, because we're in a time story here. It was Roy Daltrice's daughter, Karen Daltrice. She was with Frank Spencer in Some Mothers Do Have Them. And that's just for me. I didn't like to leave that hanging. But going back to this, I don't know, what do you think about the animation style? It's been done by the group that have done other animations, haven't they? It's the same in-house grouping that's doing these than did they do the Web of Fear bits and things?
It's possible.
Do we not know?
I'm just looking into it now. I didn't.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if this was the same folks who did the Power of the Daleks and so on. I don't know, but that is coming soon, and
we'll find out.
And we'll find out. Yeah.
November 24th, it's coming out on Blu-ray and DVD. So it's interesting that it's coming out on Blu-ray. Speaking of Blu-ray, I just picked up, I know it's been out for a while, but I finally picked it up, the Blu-ray of the first Doctor stories, Spearhead from Space.
So, I've got that. Yeah. It's good.
I still haven't watched it yet, but I'm just looking forward to seeing that in HD. Yeah.
Yeah, just one more thing about the Shada. I believe the Fourth Doctor, Tom Baker, has gone on record as saying it was his favourite story.
Huh, about that. Yeah.
We should also mention that it's written by Douglas Adams, who's episode 342, and emphasis on 42. Douglas Adams is well-known for his Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
And a lot of places.
And a side note, we can make a news reference that's coming back as another radio series.
Yes.
Doctor Who's Guide to the Galaxy is, it's been announced that there's going to be another new, they were calling it a reboot, but it was just not, it's a continuation.
Continuation, yeah. With as much of the original radio cast as possible and produced by Dirk Maggs. So I'm super happy about this, because if anybody besides Dirk Maggs was heading it, I wouldn't want to know. So.
Okay. I'm sorry to laugh, but I totally didn't hear you correctly. And I thought you said
Dirk Maggs?
I thought you see Dirk Maggs.
Not Dirk Maggs. I bet he's heard that before.
I'm sure he has.
Sorry, yes. I was not trying to be funny there. That was genuine. I really
probably
you said
tough
that.
Getting through public school. Dirk Maggs is his name. Yes. Hmm. Anyway, but yeah, so Hitchhiker come back. And shout out, and a lot of places online, my email handle or other alias is Professor Chronotis.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That's a character from Shada. So a lot of people, even, Doctor Who fans, they don't know what that refers to. So, yeah. So, get a little more Shada out there so people know who Professor Chronotis was. So.
He's now got... we know the rest of the story.
I didn't realize it was a 6-episode story. I didn't realize it was as long as that.
Yeah. And this is, when I first read about this, I thought they were reconstructing it from the audio track that they had from what they shot at the episode, but it's not. Everybody's coming back into the studio, Tom Baker and everybody. So this is going to be original audio based on Douglas Adams' script, so fantastic.
Well, we should also just fill in for those that are wondering what are we talking about. Shada was a Fourth Doctor story that unfortunately never was completed because of a strike that took place. Mm. They shot some of it on, they did record some of it, but it was never completed. And obviously, since it was never completed, it was never transmitted. And it was over the span of how many years it's been now, 30-some-odd years, it's been...
Yeah.
Pieced together in some, like there was a video that came out that had bridging narration, I think, that was bringing that brought together the pieces that were missing.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was a Big Finish story, an audio adventure, right? Wasn't there a webcast? There was an IMDb webcast.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah.
And wasn't it the Eighth Doctor instead
right.
of the?
Yes. Yeah.
They sort of retconned it so that it's all happening to Paul McGann.
Because at the time, he was the Doctor.
He was the Doctor.
As far as anything was concerned. Little did we know now.
So yeah, again, we'll have Shada once again. So
one more time.
Well, I'm not complaining. I'll get my copy and I'll
exactly.
be enjoying it. Yeah.
It'll be fine.
So, scientifically speaking,
there you go.
I think Lee should be talking about our next piece of news here.
Yeah, and I hope that we'll all spread the word far and wide through social media and so on, because surely nobody's listening to this podcast anymore by this point. But I was super excited about the fact that we're recording tonight because we just pulled all these bits together. But a lot of you know my wife is a social psychologist, and she's her field of study these days is about fans and fandom and what fans get out of their favorite story worlds. In fact, right now she's writing a book called Finding Truth in Fiction, and it's about the relationships we have with these fictional characters. And the team of researchers she's working with right now is doing a study about Doctor Who fandom. So we're hoping to get opinions. We're hoping to find some Doctor Who fans who might have opinions.
Hard breed to find, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. We'll try to search far and wide. But she's created a survey online, and here's the tiny URL. It's tinyurl.com/Doctor Who survey, all one word. It's as simple as that. tinyurl.com/Doctor Who survey. And you go there and you will answer some questions about who's your favorite doctor, who's your favorite companion, talk about stories, whatever. Complete the survey and you'll be in the running for $100.
Nice, sweet. And I should just point out it's Doctor spelled out DOCTOR.
Correct. Yes. not the way it often appeared in the closing titles. Mm-hmm. Yes, DOCTORWHOSURVEY. Yeah. And as we're recording this, the survey actually isn't live yet. But by the time this is posted and goes out, it'll all be up there and running. Since they can't send you cash from a scientific survey, what they're doing is that they'll draw somebody randomly from the survey, and they'll get a gift card from Amazon or a gift card from the BBC Doctor Who store. And I'm thinking most people are going to go for the Doctor Who store, but who knows?
So let me ask you this. How long, depending on when people might be listening to this, do they have to complete the survey, if you don't mind my asking?
I do, because I don't know the answer to it.
Okay.
Yeah. But I think this has to be doing data collection for a while, because but this is kind of a big study, big survey.
Cool.
So, I'll find out if there's a drawbridge time when we have to.
Well, the reason I ask, because I would like to also put it on our show too.
Exactly.
And so we don't know if it has a closing time, and also, do you know if it's active yet, the surveys?
Not as we record this, but it will be by the time you get it all posted.
Okay.
So,
all right.
Yeah. Back to one of the there's some other layers to this, is that this link will take you to is the short survey. And then when you get to the end of answering your questions, like who's your favorite doctor, who's your favorite companion, and that kind of thing, then there'll be a link to follow that says, would you like to tell us more? And then you can go to a longer survey where you can do sort of essay type answers, you know, tell us what Doctor Who means to you, you know. Mm-hmm. So for people who want to do that. But anyway.
And for Kyle's benefit, is one of the prizes meeting Alex Kingston?
I don't think so. If we could swing that, I'd already have her here at the house. So,
yeah. Well, let me say this: since I have met Karen Shackelford, that is a good enough prize to do the survey.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, she's my river song. She's. This is serious stuff.
It's good. It's just good.
They really are. This is for the book, and this is also for greater study about, what makes us tick. How can we care so much about something that we know is not, in quotes, true, but it does have a reality.
What do you mean it's not true? What are you talking about?
You know what I mean? It's just a TV show.
Oh, yeah. If I ever say, don't tell him about the Easter Bunny. Oh, dear.
Darn it.
Yeah.
Well, it's Santa Claus is real because he appeared in Doctor Who.
That's right. Well, what's more, we know he's a Time Lord, because otherwise how could he get around the planet in one day?
And this is true.
That bag is clearly bigger on the inside. So, yeah.
So I, while we're talking about your wife, I have to give another shout out of props to her. She was recently featured in a segment, brief, but featured nonetheless, feature on Good Morning America. So I don't know if you can find that on the ABC.com website, but regardless, I saw her on Good Morning America.
That's right. Yeah, we had them here at our house shooting interviews with her. And this happens in our life because of who she is. Every now and then we'll get a call from Good Morning America, and we're going to come over and interview you tonight. Okay. All right. Come on. tinyurl.com/Doctor Who Survey. Please, the more people who participate in this, the better for science.
Did you say that? Is there an end date to it?
I don't know what it is. You're asking me the one thing that I have not found out, so I don't know. But we can certainly put that into the social media and everything else. So
we should add, of course, time travelers can fill it in at any time.
Also true, yeah. Well, actually, they already have. So yeah.
Yes, they can read the results and then go back and create a paradox. Yes.
That's right. Please don't do that. If you're listening to this and you have access to the to time travel, please don't do that. So there you go.
Well, thank you, and thank your wife as well. We're looking forward to filling out that survey.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's, go ahead.
I was going to say, we've been doing news so long, I'm not even sure I can remember way back to the beginning. Did we mention that it's 40 years of K-9 before we wrap up?
Oh, yeah, that's right. We just had the anniversary. It was like a week or two ago. Was it October 2nd?
I think so.
Yeah, so that marked
affirmative.
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 That marked the 40th anniversary of K-9's first appearance on Doctor Who.
Well, I guess it's a good time to bring this up. When Karen was telling me about them putting the survey together, she had gone to a site, I guess it's the BBC site, that lists all the doctors and all the companions. She's just checking her own facts, you know, to make sure she's spelling everybody's name right and so on. And one of the things that she found was that they had listed K-9 as a companion, but not Rory.
That puts him in his place.
Yeah. we were both like, wait, what?
What?
What? Anyway.
Okay, so did they list Mickey as a companion?
Just finished.
Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah.
So therefore, then, because I would consider K-9 a companion.
Yeah.
Hey. You know, robot dogs have rights too. So there
right.
You go.
But I'm just, I agree K-9 should be Rory. On the list, but so should Rory. I mean, it's a story point that he traveled on the TARDIS. It's vital to the show.
See, they made that, okay, see, all right, I know what it is now. They made that list while Rory was dead.
Erase memory banks.
He's writing out notes.
Memory erased.
That's what happened. Yeah.
Affirmative.
And I mean, it's not. I mean, he's had a fairly recent redesign, hadn't he? K-9 as well.
Yes, quite, I don't like it.
Oh, again and again.
Making him more cutesy.
Yeah, I don't like it.
They redecorated.
Yeah, and I don't like it.
Yeah.
Just like the Klingons, true. We don't talk about that.
I don't like it.
Yeah.
Well,
he flies.
Happy birthday, K-9.
And I think
I'm going to round out our news. I know there's probably plenty of other news stories that fell through the cracks, but if you're listening and we didn't cover something that you felt that we should, please let us know. You can send us feedback@podshock.net. Always love to hear from you. Of course, this is an audio podcast, so if you can send an audio clip of your feedback, that would be most appreciative. But even a text will read out on the show, if possible. So we do have a review. I know it's the news ran long, but we'll keep, knock on wood, we'll keep the review short. We'll be right back with our review. If all goes well, knock on wood. And yeah, I gave it away what we're reviewing.
This is Deborah Watling, and you're listening to Doctor Who Podshot.
Hi, this is Lee Shackelford reminding you that Doctor Who Podshock is brought to you by Audible. You probably heard of Audible. Just in case, they are the world's leading provider of audiobooks. They have more than 150,000 titles. Let me say that again. 150,000 titles to choose from. Imagine a genre, they've got an audiobook in it. And these files play on iPhones, Kindles, iPads, any smartphone. In fact, over 500 different devices. Now, for fans of Doctor Who Podshock, Audible is offering a free download when you start a new Audible subscription. You can choose anything at all from that vast library, but we know you'll want to get one of their delicious Doctor Who titles. They're performed for you by actors you know and love, wonderful voices, Tom Baker, Paul McGann, David Tennant, on and on it goes. Try it out for 30 days, and if at the end of that month you decide Audible is not for you, you still get to keep that Doctor Who book you downloaded. So let me put it this way. Free Doctor Who book, right? So here's how to get started. Point your favorite web browser to audibletrial.com/podjock. That's audibletrial, all one word, audibletrial.com/podjock. Pick your free book. You're going to love it.
Podshock.
And we're back with Doctor Who Podshock. So once again, we're here, and joining me is, as always, we have Dave. We have Dave Cooper, Kyle Jones, and Lee Shackelford, and I'm Louis Trapani. And we got through a mammoth segment of news, and not to disappoint, we have a review to do as well. So we're catching up on this last series of Doctor Who, series 10 or the 2017, I don't know what number we're up to anymore. Yes, of Doctor Who, Peter Capaldi's 12th Doctor's last series. So we did last episode, we did Thin Ice, and so this episode we are reviewing once again the next episode, which is Knock Knock. And as always, we played a little bit of this before. We'll play a little bit more, but just to be aware.
Spoilers.
Spoilers. Again. Spoilers. Spoilers.
All right. Well, you get the idea. So if you haven't seen Knock Knock, you are instructed not to go any further and save the rest of this podcast until you have. And if you have seen it already, well, listen to this.
What's going on? Oh!
Oh, we should get the doctor.
Why, what's he going to do? Lecture?
Just a long day, just a long day.
Do you like this music, Doctor?
Reminds me of Quincy Jones. I stepped in for him once. The bassist he'd hired turned out to be a Clarge, Neon Death, and Volk, or what was worse, he couldn't play. This is very interesting.
The door?
Because it isn't.
Isn't?
The door. Anymore. Try to open it.
Come on. Shireen did it a minute ago. So it's locked?
No. Look. It's completely sealed.
I don't understand. The shutters.
What about them?
Closed by themselves.
I gotta say, you know, this is like maybe the third time playing that clip, and you think I would know what was included, and when I started playing it, I turned around, I thought someone was knocking on my door behind me. I actually did a quick take. I'm like, who's that at the door? And I realized, no, it's the clip.
And that will make more sense to those people listening to this podcast via a headset.
Yes, yeah. It's pretty amazing what you did there, Dave, with the bilateral, whatever you call it.
Binaural.
Binaural, yes. So, yeah, so this was the fourth episode of this new series?
Correct.
Past series. And once again, starring Peter Capaldi as the Doctor and Pearl Mackey as Bill Potts and Matt Lucas as Nordle. And it was directed by Bill Anderson and written by Mike Barlett. It's the haunted house story of Doctor Who. You know, we got into I don't know if I want to call it a rut, but there was a while where it seemed like every series of Doctor Who had like one like haunted house story, and sort of fell into this pattern, if you will. And this was when I saw the coming attractions for this, it was like, this is the haunted house episode, and it certainly was. And it seems timely now, being that at least you know, we're a couple of weeks away from Halloween, that this was the episode that we're reviewing now.
Yeah, and actually that fitted even more in this particular series, because with the Smile being the future episode and then the Thin Heist being the historic one, the two preceding ones, we were very much back into that old style of, oh, this is the second episode, it must be historical, or the third episode, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So you're absolutely right. It had 2.3 million viewers here in the UK on its first airing, which I think was the 6th of May. But it got an AI rating of 83, which I'm a little bit surprised at. The range of ratings, by the way, for this series as a whole was pretty much standard. In other words, what I'm trying to say about Series 10 without giving an overview is that the standard was pretty even. There were no really great heights scaled, and there were no really bad troughs. Lie of the Land maybe accepted. But they were most getting 82, 83, 84, down to 81. So it was a very, I think it was a solid series, episode 10, and with Smile and Thin Ice prior to this, I think maybe some of us were expecting Knock Knock to knock our socks off. And I think it failed to achieve somewhat.
Absolutely, it failed.
Yeah,
100% it failed.
Why, Kyle? Give us your reasons.
Well, let's see. For starters, that would have been the episode that aired. We were at Lee Clarence and I were at Hulanta that weekend, and there was a live viewing, and we didn't go watch the live viewing. Lee, you didn't either, did you?
No.
I didn't think so. So we didn't watch the live viewing, mainly for me, it was because I was worried about how well I would be able to hear, and I didn't want to miss, with that big of a crowd, and I didn't want to miss that first airing of the episode. Then when we got home and I watched it, it was like, I really didn't miss anything. I could have probably have watched it, with a group of people and enjoyed it better than I did. I just found this story boring. That's just me. It was just boring.
No, it's not just you. I now really want to find out more about Mike Bartlett, who wrote this script. And he's an accomplished, multiple award-winning, storied and treasured playwright in the UK. And, which may just show that there's, maybe those things are not as alike as we sometimes think they are. It seems like that should be somebody who should be able to write for television really well. But I just feel like he got into all of the tropes that we know. I kept thinking it reminded me of episodes of Scooby-Doo.
Well,
where are you?
A mention of Scooby-Doo in the actual episode where one of the characters says, a Scooby-Doo house,
Right.
Definitely and when, a Scooby-Doo house or something like that.
Exactly. said it, I thought, that sounds almost defensive.
We know exactly where Lee's coming through. Well, if you know Lee, you do. What he's really disappointed is David Suchet's in it, and he still didn't like it.
Exactly.
And that's me
seriously.
Too.
Yeah. Because I am a huge fan of the Poirot series and of him in particular. But when I watched it again, I was able to sort of say, I just forget about the story and just watch him. And he is still marvelous.
By the way,
he
plays the landlord for those that are listening.
Yeah.
House is really creaky. Everything you touch is like...
It's unavoidable, my dear.
How do you get into the tower?
You don't. The tower is specifically excluded from the terms of our agreement.
Oh, right. Well, thank you. No tower, got it.
All right. Oh, yeah. Are you staying here tonight?
Yeah.
No, he's not.
Well, I'm not sure.
There's no reason to.
I probably will.
There isn't a bed, so...
All right. Sorry, excuse me. Sorry. Who's the Prime Minister?
Oh, I beg your pardon?
Margaret Thatcher. Harriet Jones.
Come on.
Wilson, Eden.
I think it's better to leave your granddaughter here with her friends. They seem respectable. And I'll keep an eye, of course. I'll attend to your requirements in the morning. In the meantime, sleep well.
I take it back. You're fine. He's weird.
And you know what I noticed this time that I didn't notice before? I didn't notice this at all. But his mother, spoiler, is Mariah Gale. You talk about people who... this is kind of an amazing role for her, but she is also an actress of extraordinary accomplishment. I kept thinking when I'd seen it before, where have I seen her before? I know her from somewhere. Well, of course I do. The Royal Shakespeare Company's Hamlet, that they made the fine film of in 2009, she's Ophelia to David Tennant's Hamlet.
And you don't think her acting was a little wooden here?
She was a little stilted.
A little stiff.
Throw him all the way.
No, but I think that's why you get an actress of her caliber. Of her timbre. How about that? because if you know that you're, that it's going to involve...
Well, she can branch off.
She's well rooted in her career.
Yeah, well, that's something to say. It was not a well rooted script. I mean,
just looking at her wiki page around the time of that Ophelia, Hamlet, she was in Comedy of Errors, As You Like It, Diary of Anne Frank, Hamlet, Love, Labour's Lost, Midsummer Night's Dream, yeah, Oliver fantastic. Twist. The Tempest, Julius Caesar, Antony, Cleopatra. 'Tis pity she's a war. No, that wasn't a description of the actress. That was another show.
That's the name of the play, yes. Yeah. Here she is, and I, and if you're aware of it, you know, that's a person in there. She's fantastic too. But it's just so, it's just disappointing. The script ended up going exactly where I thought it was going to go. And,
too bad. I was thrown. One of the things I did like about it, by the way, was actually the annoying nature of the Doctor in this, because she doesn't really want him in this part. The Doctor is where she goes and adventures with, and this is a. It's like a child when the parents, you know, the children in a pub, and the parents turn up and they're embarrassed because, you know. No, I don't want you in this part of my life.
Yes, I like that too, yeah.
Yeah, yes. I'm chilling out.
This is the part of my life you're not in, yeah.
And he's sort of sitting there like a lurch, you know, eating crisps noisily while things are going on and being totally intrusive and not appropriate at all. I thought the group of actors that played the students were a little bit inconsistent. I mean, there was one of the guys who, unfortunately, I don't know if it was his... He usually wears contact lenses or whatever, but he seemed to have sort of a little bit of a gawpy face. Who's the guy in Harry Potter? The friend of Hermione and Harry.
Ron.
Yeah, he was in the, and I think I said it on the podcast, he comes from the Ron Weasley School of Acting, you know, where you just go up at things. But there was some great acting. I think the girls that were in it were much better. And of course, one of the things that we uncovered was the fact that this took place in the same house that was used for Blink. Mm-hmm. And it was also used in the Snowman episode. Where there's the sign where when Clara, who's the nanny for the children, she goes in to speak to the man of the house in front of the fireplace, and he has a Freudian slip and he talks about fancying her or something. That room is in that same house, and the gates you see at the beginning are the gates that Sally Sparrow climbs over in Blink. So it's a great venue that they've used, and it looks totally different, but very suitable with the sort of atmospheric rooms. I'm not too sure what we think. What do you think of the? We said it at the beginning, almost as though this was going to be a cheap episode, but there's quite a lot of CGI effects when they had this sort of cockroachy type things.
Oh, yeah.
Going around. Yeah. I mean,
the dryads, it's kind of interesting because the Doctor just comes up with the name dryads because he has to call them something. He can't just call them lice. So as I was taking my notes for this episode, I type out dryads, and I was expecting to get that red underline, like I misspelled something because it's a made up word from Doctor Who, and I'm like, oh, it's not coming up that way. And so I did some research on it, and the reason why it's not coming up because it's actually a Greek. It comes from Greek folklore, like spirits living in objects such as like an oak tree or something like that. I'm like,
nymphs of the oak tree. Yeah.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't just a made up word. It's actually it does have some historical meaning to it.
Yeah, I think there was some inconsistency, though, in the way they portrayed this sort of things. First of all, there was one that seemed to get consumed into the wall, a little bit like Pirates of the Caribbean and being in the sort of the timbers of the pirate ship. There was another one that was trying to get through the windows, and it almost looks as though the window clappers were trying to eat them. And then others that sort of fell into the wood. And there was one that was standing there, and these creatures came, and they almost looked as though they consumed them. So I felt a little bit betrayed in a way when they brought them back towards the end. And we are giving a fairly brief summary of this, so I don't feel too bad jumping towards the end. But the idea seemed to be that they had this sort of reunion sort of every 20 years, and when she needed feeding, they would invite people in. And that's why this person, the caretaker, the owner, as it were, landlord, seemed a little bit out of time, because he only needed to do this every so many years when they were finally absorbed into the building and they needed new. But the way that they were dispatched, a couple of them look as though they were sort of eaten and dissembled on the spot. I almost felt disappointed that this survived at the end. But I did, the revelation that really I thought was good, and the Doctor things, is when we find out that he's not the son of the Wooden Lady. He's not the father of the Wooden Lady. He's actually, in fact, the son. I thought that was cleverly done.
Yeah, it was that sort of like Twilight Zone twist at the end when that's revealed. And it's interesting that Bill, because Bill's always spotting things, and Bill's the one that picked up on it because it kind of went over the Doctor's head, and you know, and like then Bill points it out, and while Bill was trying to like the Doctor's so consumed about investigating, you know, the situation that he seems completely oblivious that these little dryads are going after Bill, and Bill's like climbing up on furniture and whatever. It was like, and then all of a sudden she realizes, like, wait a minute, how can he be the father when you know based on the time span involved? And then it turns out that he's actually the son.
Yeah. I mean, it made sense with his fascination with these creatures, the little things.
Wait, Doctor, that doesn't make sense.
Okay, not interrupt. I'm doing my thing here.
Why would he pick up insects from the garden and bring them in to see his ill daughter?
Everyone loves insects.
I don't.
They're fascinating.
Okay. Secondly, he's not wood. He's just like us.
He's... Yes.
So if he's her father, and she was preserved 70 years ago...
No flies in you, Bill. And no bugs in you.
I do not understand.
I forget, you see. Your human lifespan, it's not long, is it?
Do not let them trouble you.
What do you remember of the past, Eliza?
My father, he knows what's best.
Yes, the lice preserve the appearance and the voice, but not so much the memories. He's not your father, am I right?
No! Stop talking!
Father... What's the matter? I don't understand.
Your father would have had better things to do than playing with insects in the garden. But he isn't your father. When you were ill, he was sent out of the house by the doctors who are failing to save his mother.
His mother?
Eliza, he's your son.
I don't know. I am surprised it got the high rating. I mean, I'm looking here and Rotten Tomatoes even give it 88%. So it did have people that enjoyed it. And it was elevated, I think, by having those two actresses, the one that played Eliza and of course, the David Suchet character. But it was... Was it a disposable episode? Let me ask. I'll do what Kyle does. Let me ask you a question, Kyle.
Sure.
Do you think this was a disposable episode, or is it one you will return to and watch again and again?
Okay, I will not return to it and watch it again and again, but there is one thing that makes this whole, I hate cockroaches, roaches, anything that looks like roaches. That's one of my like pet peeves of anything. So having said that, the one thing that is redeemable for me for this episode, to answer your question, is the part at the very beginning where they're inside the TARDIS and he, being the doctor, makes the reference of regeneration. And Bill asks, what is that? And he does not answer. And later in this series, that moment makes adds to events later in the series. So for that, it's redeemable. But everything else, meh.
Yeah, I sort of like, I like that conversation that, you know, because, you know, we're still early on with Bill, you know, getting to know the doctor. And, you know, so here we see that the doctor is sort of introducing Bill to, you know, his race, you know, that he's a Time Lord. And he goes, you know, well, you know, she's kind of surprised about, you know, the terminology, you know, and don't you guys wear large hats? And no, just big collars, you know. So it, you know, gave us, you know, for a long time, Doctor Who fans, it was warming to, you know, because we just get that imagery back to when we see, you know, Deadly Assassin with those big collars and all that.
Now, we know that Lee's got a bit of a time pressure here. Lee, do you want to have any more comments on this one or give an assessment?
Oh, thank you. I was just about to say, it sounds like we all have the same favorite moment in this episode, because that's, to me, that is the saving grace of Knock Knock, as I love that conversation in the TARDIS. Yeah. We talked before about it seemed obvious to us as longtime fans of the series that for whatever reason, the showrunners had decided that we need to sort of bring new fans on board with some of the key concepts. So every episode has got one, you know, we learned what TARDIS stands for. You know, we learned that, you know, and that kind of thing. And then this was the one where we got Time Lord. Okay. And he actually says, you know, that's all you need to know. Let's just move on. But, she wants to bring it into about regeneration too. And he says, no. So,
well, it seems like this whole series has been like that, where it's
exactly sort of that's what I mean. Yeah,
to Doctor Who, right. You know, back to, you know, the character's name Bill and Bill Hartnell, and that first story,
right? And Heather,
much like an unruly child, and
two hearts. Why have they given you two plates of food?
Right,
So, you know. Let me say this, if you don't mind me jumping in front of you, Lee, is we were talking about redeemable points of what would make you go back and watch this episode again. I have two words to answer that question. Bill Potts.
Yeah, that's right. It is a great Bill episode. It's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and besides Scooby-Doo, it was Indiana Jones was referenced as well in that clip that we started off this review was Quincy Jones. So some
In previous ones, they've always been a superhero that's got mentioned, but at least we did get sort of basically social commentary. We got real world, you know, shout outs.
And I thought Eliza in the wooden state just it reminded me a bit of something that we might have seen in a Tom Baker story for some reason. I don't know, if maybe because I'm thinking of that 14th season TARDIS console room, but she just in that wooden state, she just seemed very.
Well, it's like the wooden king and queen in the wardrobe one, wasn't it?
And I know it's more like stone, but also a little bit like Eldred in Hand of Fear, too.
Yeah. So I think it was in the end, it was a sad story. I mean, when it came to the ending, you know, it's just a very sad story. No, they both, I mean, obviously we gave out spoiler alerts and all that, but they don't continue on and they come to an end. And, you know, and here they've been like trying to prolong their lives. And he was hoping that, you know, somehow that he, you know, she may be cured or whatever, and it's just not going to happen. And she urges him to go off and live his life and see the world, and he refuses, and so it all comes to an end. And then these little dryads, whatever, restore them, which doesn't make any sense because it seems like they consumed them earlier, and now they bring them back fully clothed and with sneakers and whatever, you know, all intact. And,
we saw her feeding off the energy, so yeah. And as more than one fan pointed out, why would they back the most recent ones, if that was possible, when this has been going on for decades? I guess they're just dead, but these guys are not. Okay, whatever.
That doesn't make much sense either,
New France, fireworks, that's what life should be.
I remember. My son. Leave my side at last. Go and see the world.
No, I don't want to. If you won't finish them, I will!
My little boy, this has to end.
No, we mustn't end. We have to destroy them.
It's our time. I don't want to. No. No. Thank you.
Look out here. Yes, your friend.
I think Dave mentioned that, you know, they did, you know, as far as visualization goes, the direction, the actual the technical credits of the story, I think, were outstanding. The sound was outstanding. The surround sound, especially if you have like a 5.1 or 7.1 setup, when they're knocking, you really feel like they're knocking behind you and all that. They really did a good job with that. I have to say I'm not a big fan of haunted house stories, so my expectations going into this was pretty low to begin with. So maybe because of that, I'm going to probably give it a little higher rating than maybe everyone else, only because I was going in with such low expectations. But I probably would give it maybe 3 Tartar Scrones out of 5, but not much more than that.
I couldn't give it any higher than that. No, it's too... on first viewing, it was more like 2 out of 5, but and I have watched it a couple of times for commentary and prior to this one, so it's a middle of the road one. It didn't cover itself in glory, but it didn't also bring the series down. And this is obviously one of those cases in point where if this had gone out in October in the winter, in the fall, may have had a little bit more of an impact. As it did, it went out in May of the year, and that probably just diluted its effect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, like I said, it's more timely now, being October. It seems like a more timely episode than it probably was back in May. So what would you give it? I guess you give it the same rating then?
Yeah, I can go with the 3, but that actually sounds a little bit higher than I really mean.
Maybe 2.5.
Probably.
Yeah. I'm pretty much wavering in there. I guess I was being generous with the 3.
All right, so here's mine. I'm going to give it a 3 simply because of Bill Potts, and I'm going to give it a 3 simply because of that conversation that we've all mentioned it. However, I'm going to subtract 1 and make it a 2 because of the buzz.
I didn't know Beth was
going to
be involved.
Yes. So I'm going to make it a solid, semi-solid.
But divide
semi-solid,
by 3 and then the square root of 5.
Oh, and the wibbly and the wobbly and the timey and the whimy, and make it a malleable 2 because I hate those darn bugs. So there you go.
I guess in the same way, I want to give it 3, but then I think, wow, 3 is actually kind of a lot because I did not like this episode at all, because I'm with Kyle on the bugs. But I will give it you're right, you know, it's also a great episode for Bill, and it does have David Suchet, so you know, three cheers for that. And I'm with Dave, too. I think it's just wonderful to see the doctor kind of poking his nose in where he's clearly not wanted. That's just,
Bill just wants some normal time away from with her friends.
Exactly. That aspect of it, I thought, was delightful. So, yeah, 3 out of 5. Dave, you mentioned the Rotten Tomatoes note on this, that was in the 80s. When Kyle and I just did a review of The Five Doctors, and Clarence dug up that Rotten Tomatoes gave that 85 out of 100. So.
Right.
So if Five Doctors could get... anyway... I'm losing faith in Rotten Tomatoes is what I'm saying.
Okay, so let me say this, since you just mentioned Clarence. Yeah. Lee, wouldn't you say out of the three of us that anything we watch, Clarence and we review together, Clarence always comes across as being the most forgiving of anything that we watch? Wouldn't you say that's kind of true?
I suppose so, yeah.
Okay, so the reason I asked that question was I told him that you and I would be recording with Lee and Dave tonight, earlier this afternoon, or maybe it may have been last night. So I'm going to real quick read the text back and forth. I said, we both didn't like Knock Knock, did we, if I recall correctly? His reply was, no, oh, hated it, actually.
Yeah, there you go. So, yeah, we were not our review of Knock Knock was not kind. No,
not kind at all.
Yeah.
And if I remember correctly, I think I probably liked it less when I originally saw it. I think, you know, sometimes you watch the second viewing, sometimes you may appreciate it on a different level. I don't know. I don't think I was that overjoyed with it the first time.
There's lots of little things that can pick it up. I mean, like when we did our commentary and found out that one of the actors that was in it hadn't realised he'd actually hired that house for his holidays a previous Christmas.
Yeah.
And because they came in a different entrance, he turned up on set to do his bit, and he said, I've stayed here. And he'd actually stayed in the house for his holidays. So, and the fact that it's the Blink House, it's an episode that has its plus points. It has some, good casting. The sound effect they actually pushed the boat out for. So it has its place. It's not a scribble in the Doctor Who footnotes.
Well, I think I remember watching it for the first time. I'm trying to recall, watching it the first time watching it. And I think something that Lee had mentioned earlier was that, it fell into the same cliches of haunted house stories. I think maybe if they did something different, maybe having it, instead of, this all happening in the darkness of night, and there wasn't a thunderstorm, or there was yes. thunder, but there wasn't really a storm, or whatever. So maybe if it happened during broad daylight, and it was these things were happening, it might have been at least something different and change it up a bit, and instead of falling into the cliche of haunted house, imagery and sounds that we're so, been run in the rut with. All right. Well, everyone give their review? Everyone gave their TARDIS groans?
Yep.
All right. Well, I think that's going to round out this review, unless anyone else has anything else to say about it. Knock on wood.
Not me.
All right.
Nope.
So, we will be back. I know we said that last time, and
we were back.
It's mostly comes down to me and my schedule, and unfortunately, my schedule is so in flux that it's hard to plan things out with other people. It'd be if my schedule was just a little more consistent, it'd be easier to plan these recordings. But once again, we're going to attempt to come out on a more regular basis and get some air with some oxygen.
Oh, yeah. Good.
With our next episode. All right. Well, until then, as always, we want to hear from you. So feedback is always welcome. As I said early in the show, you can send us your feedback by sending emails. You can send a recorded message to feedback@podshock.net, and just keep the recordings down to a couple of minutes, not anything longer than that. And so for future reference in our shows, we can play them. So, but you can also catch You can catch Dave and Ian on the Cultum Collective. And Dave, you want to make a mention of that?
I'll be very brief. Yeah, we do them live, just doing them monthly at the moment because Doctor Who's off air. But the easiest way to find the Cultum Collective podcast is on iTunes, and I'll keep it brief.
Okay, and you can catch Lee and Kyle, as well as Clarence, on Discussing Who, and would either one of you like to fill our listeners in on more on that?
Well, we can. We are counting down going to Christmas, so we're looking forward to that, watching some old Doctor Who. And just really briefly, I'll mention that our last episode that we had, and I told her I would give her a shout-out on Doctor Who Podshock, which is an interview with a YouTube reactor, which was a interesting interview to have, but she loves her Doctor Who fans, and she said she actually referred to the Doctor Who fans as some of the nicest, kindest people that she has ever come in contact with. So that was our last episode, and the YouTube channel is Seska Says, SeskaSays. So go check that out, and yep, that's what we're doing, and we can be found at discussingwho.com.
Excellent. And Lee, don't you, to break away from our sort of something else, something now for something completely different, or some, you have a drama series, a podcast drama series. Would you like to make a mention of that?
Yeah, we're still, we're getting ready for the third batch of Relativity, and people can find out more about that at relativitypodcast.com.
Excellent. All right. Well, I want to thank all of you and thank all our listeners. And thanks for hanging in there during this hiatus. I'll use that word since Doctor Who fans are well acquainted with that word.
Yeah.
But we are back, and it's about time. And space and relative dimensions. All right. So go. Until next time, cheers, everyone.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Hey, Lou Strapani here, and a post-production note. This past week, our website, podshock.net or gallifreyanmc.org, is currently down, so just a heads up about that. We're working to restore it, and may have to be reincarnated, so just stay patient with that, and hopefully we'll have that site back up and running again. The podcast will hopefully continue. They'll be posted on iTunes and arttrop.com, but our website, podshock.net and gallifreyanmc.org, one and the same, is currently, at the time of this post-production of this episode, is still down. Thanks for your patience, and see you soon. You have been listening to Doctor Who Podshock, presented to you by the fan-run GallifreyanMC.org. Doctor Who is owned and trademarked by the BBC. Doctor Who Podshock is not affiliated with the BBC in any way. Doctor Who Podshock theme music by Jeff Smith at thejeffsmith.com. This has been a production of Art Trap Productions and has been made possible by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you. This podcast is also supported by the Podshock Podcast Companion app, now in the iTunes App Store. Visit arttrap.com for more information on this and other podcasts.
What's going on?